Welcome to this week's episode of the Jewish Diaspora Report. On this week's episode, we look into what we should learn from the story of Purim. Let's get started. For many of our listeners, you've probably wrapped up your Purim celebrations for this year and had a great time dressing up, having a good party, and meeting with friends. But most importantly, during Purim, one very important aspect that is a requirement of celebrating Purim is to listen to the Megillah, or the reading of the Book of Esther. On this week's episode, we want to talk about how this year, reading the Book of Esther is so extra significant, and why it means so much more, and how we can learn lessons from that story that we're able to translate into how to act today. For any of our listeners that might be new and haven't heard some of our old episodes, we've done an episode before on Purim. It's episode number 53. If you want a little bit of a background on what Purim is, the history of Purim, the Book of Esther, and all of that stuff, I'm going to try not to go over too much of that again, since you could go back and listen to it. So if you want to pause it here, go back to episode 53, and then come back to this one. Maybe you'll have a little bit of extra insight into the Book of Esther before we get started on this podcast and why it's so important this year. Sitting in a synagogue this year, listening to the story of Esther being read, really affected me in a different way. And I couldn't help but think, while listening to the story that's thousands of years old, how it really sounds almost identical to what's going on today in the Jewish community. On this episode, I'd like to talk a little bit about these similarities, and maybe how we can use some of these similarities and what happened then to better understand what we should be doing now. Really quickly, for those of you who haven't heard our last episode or read the Book of Esther, just as a little reminder, very quick summary, in the Book of Esther, we hear about a Persian Jewish community, one that was in exile from Israel after the Babylonian exile. And this Persian community found themselves with a very high up official, someone just underneath the king, who decided that he wanted to take out his revenge against a Jewish man named Mordechai, who refused to bow down to this royal man, and so as a response decided that he wanted to destroy the entire Jewish community of Persia. And as a response, this man and his niece, Esther, came to the rescue of the Jewish community and not only thwarted this attempt at genocide, but were able to get the king to agree that the Jewish community can stand up for itself and protect themselves and kill anybody who was actually attempting to kill them and commit a genocide. And by the end of the story, the Jewish community not only survives, but gets revenge on the man who tried to commit the genocide and his sons. I'm not sure if any of my listeners kind of already see the connection here between what's going on today in Gaza and with Hamas and the people who were living in Persia thousands of years ago. Many people have already noted this online. I don't pretend to be an amazing scholar that I figured this out on my own. Many people have seen this connection, especially the fact that the bad guy in the story, his name is Haman, whereas the bad guys today are called Hamas. Kind of similar, maybe it's a coincidence, maybe it's meant to be, who knows? One of the first things that stood out to me in this story while we're reading it in synagogue is hearing the fact that the king, we know him as Ahasuerus, some people think it's Xerxes of the Persian Empire, the king tells his advisor, Haman, that he is allowed to do whatever he wants to the community of Jews. Do what you want. Here's my signet ring. You can make orders and put into law any kind of genocidal ideas you have. I don't care. And the amazing part of this is that the king, who technically is the ruler of the nation, really has no interest in saving the Jewish community. He has no interest in what's going on in his community at all. When this sort of second in command, we'll call him, goes up to the king and demands or asks for the ability to wipe out an entire part of the country, the king really doesn't mind this issue at all and doesn't really even protest. And it really made me think of what's going on today in Gaza, where, you know, for the most part, we see leaders of countries around the world at first sort of standing up for the Jewish community and for Israel and anti-Semitism is wrong and, you know, we should stop it. And slowly these people kind of backed off and kind of really didn't care what was going on in their communities. If you look at a lot of countries around the world, you see people leading countries that are supporting Hamas and people who are somewhat indifferent to Hamas and other people who are just maybe a little bit too controlled by their left flank. You know, people are looking for votes in a time of an election. So therefore, I will let you decide what is best for our community. And we've seen the rise in anti-Semitism in an astronomical way. And yet the leaders kind of just ignore the problem. They pretend, maybe they pay lip service, but the reality is I couldn't help but feel this complete similarity between a second in command or someone who's not a ruler dictating a policy to a ruler who is fairly indifferent and will just go along with it. Kind of makes me feel like what's going on today, where people are now pushing the governments to do certain things. We recently had in Canada a third party, the left party, trying to put forward a motion to demonize Israel. And the government kind of just said, sure, okay, we'll water it down a little bit, but then we'll just let you do it. Why is a third party dictating in Canada what the government should do? It is really no different than someone like Haman, who's an advisor or a second in command, telling a king, hey, I want to wipe out the Jewish community. And the king goes, yeah, do whatever you want. Another really interesting part that stuck out to me during the reading of the Megillah. In Esther chapter 4, we have Queen Esther, who at that point is queen and safe by all standards of being the wife of the king. And her uncle Mordechai comes to her with the plot against the Jewish community as a whole. And he says to her, quote, do not think that you will escape the fate of all Jews by being in the king's palace. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and salvation will come to the Jews from another source, and you and the house of your father will be lost. What Mordechai is saying to her is, don't think that your Jewish status and your Jewish history and your Jewish identity is somehow going to be ignored because of where you're sitting and where you're living. And it stood out to me so powerful, considering today, people in North America, and especially Jews in North America, who are for ceasefires and pro-Hamas and anti-Israel, and so many times we've talked about them as, quote, pick me Jews, people who are like, I want to fit in with the larger crowd, so I'll kind of whitewash my Jewish heritage. We saw recently, and we talked about on the podcast, the gentleman who got up on the Oscar stage and quote unquote renounced his Judaism live on television. This is what I was thinking when I'm reading this passage in this book of Esther. Mordechai is warning Esther, if you think being comfortable and living in a place that's so safe and free from the anti-Semitism, you think that's going to save you? The reality is you are a Jew. You can't renounce your religion. Any of these Jews who support Hamas or anti-Israel who are not standing up to anti-Semitism, you might think you're safe now because you're living in the palace of the left, the palace of a college ivory tower. If you think you're safe because you are going to go up on stage or tell the world, oh, I'm giving up on my Judaism, that's not going to save you. And Mordechai makes this incredibly clear to Esther. You can't hide your Judaism. You can't give up your Judaism in order to save yourself from this genocidal idea that all Jews of Persia should die. It will not save you. So that really affected me, knowing what's going on today on the left, in Jewish left circles, where they are giving up on Israel and turning to try and embrace the anti-Israel left. It's not going to save you. And Mordechai makes it very clear here. And that's one of the big points that Esther takes and says, you're right, I need to act. Following this, Esther does act and she does speak up and she bravely goes into the king's court against the rules for someone to do that without permission and saves the Jewish community by explaining to the king what's going on. Now, these days, unfortunately, when we compare to modern times, unfortunately, it seems like we all have been screaming from the rooftops about the fact that anti-Semitism is on the rise and that nobody seems to be taking it seriously. Maybe we need some Jewish people who are higher up in the government, like Esther was, to bring it to their attention. There are a lot of influential and famous people online that are able to scream even louder than any of us can scream about what's going on in the world. Sadly, is anyone really listening? I don't know. Maybe hopefully one day we'll get someone in a leadership position who stands up for us. There are definitely a few countries with leaders that are standing up for the Jewish community, as they should. Maybe soon we'll get to the point where more leaders will come back to their senses after hearing and seeing from these people that they really need to take this seriously. Something like when Esther brought it to the attention of the king. Later in the story, as Haman fails at his attempt to kill the Jewish people, including even putting up a gallows outside of his own house in order to kill Mordechai, the leader of the Jewish community, on his own front lawn, the king finds out about the fact that he'd built some gallows and ordered that Haman himself be put on the gallows that he had created for Mordechai, essentially giving him his own punishment for what he wanted to do to others. It really is incredible to think that we have a person here who wanted to kill the entire Jewish community who failed, and he received a fairly just punishment in getting exactly what he had hoped to do to Mordechai. We would think that the story is over at this point, right? Haman is dead, so we're good. Unfortunately, for those of you who have read the story of Esther, you know that once that decree had been sent out to the communities around the country, it was an official law, and therefore the genocide of the Jews was still happening, even with Haman dead. So again, Esther stood up and demanded that the king do something about it. And so he then made a decree that the Jewish people were allowed to defend themselves from these mobs, and there will be no repercussions for the fact that they would defend themselves. And the Jewish communities rose up after getting notice of this day of genocide and stood up and made sure to defend themselves and killed those who were trying to kill them. They made sure that anybody attacking a Jewish community got what they deserved, just like Haman got what he deserved. As it says in Esther chapter 8, "The king has allowed the Jews of every city to gather and stand up for their own lives, to annihilate, kill, and destroy every army of any nation or province that might attack them." I assume by now many of you who are listening probably can see the connections here. We have an attempted genocide by a group of people who were attempting literally to kill the entire Jewish community of Persia under the leadership of one man named Haman. And I can't help but notice the similarities between the advisor to the king manipulating the king or the leader into allowing them to force this policy of genocide onto a group of their own people. And then the Jewish community rising up and standing up and being brave and actually surviving. And not only surviving, but being able to take out the people who are trying to take them out. And how do you not see the connection here between Hamas, who is being led into committing genocide or attempted genocide? It is literally in their charter. They're not even hiding it. And the world who is trying to convince the West that that's not what they want. And all of these world leaders who are just going along for the ride, like people who don't know any better. I don't think King Ahasuerus had any doubt what Haman meant. I don't think he was going to say, no, he means aspirational freedom from the Jews. No, they want genocide and death. And the Jews stood up and they made sure that they defended themselves, partially with the help of Esther and Mordechai. But the communities all around Persia stood up and made sure that they did not go down without a fight. And in return, the people who tried to kill the Jews were killed. And it's hard to say that we can't justify the fact that Hamas members, people who entered Israel, murdered and raped and killed and beheaded, just like Haman, these people deserve to get what they wanted to do to someone else. If they are going to commit genocide, I have very little sympathy for Hamas members who are supporting rocket fire into communities, don't want peace, have no intention of actually coexisting with anybody. It's either death or destruction for them. And if they want death and destruction, I hate to say the IDF is more than able and more than willing to give you death and destruction. The Jewish people of today and the IDF are like the Jews of the Persian communities who received notice that the townspeople are coming after you to commit a genocide. Defend yourself. You have every right to defend yourself. And if those who want to kill you have to be killed in self-defense, then so be it. One really funny side note that I'd like to mention. Another influencer online had brought this up and pointed out the fact that NPR, the media source, actually has used the story of Esther in a very weird way, unlike the way we're trying to use it right now. We're trying to talk about how it's a lesson for us to remember how to deal with issues from the past. Meanwhile, NPR tries to suggest that the story of Esther is something we should look to show that the Jews of today are like Haman and the Hamas terrorists are like the Jews, and flipped it. I don't quite understand how NPR is suggesting that they are really the Jews in this situation, because it really makes no sense. It just really does show how disgusting it is for a media organization to try to flip a story to take some painful event in Jewish history and try and flip it to make it somehow anti-Semitic. Almost like how we see constantly the references to Holocaust when referring to Gaza. Taking a disgusting thing that happened to the Jews and somehow blaming the Jews for it, it's pretty incredible. In the end, when you look at the Book of Esther, you realize that this was a crazy story that happened thousands of years ago, but it still resonates today. It's probably not an accident that all of these things match up at this time. We need to take lessons from the Book of Esther, what Queen Esther did, what Mordechai did, and make sure we don't make the mistakes of the past and we make the right decisions based on what is best for the Jewish community. When you look at the Book of Esther, you see that we can't stand by and be quiet. We can't give in because the people who want to kill us are going to try and kill us. There's nothing stopping them. The leadership doesn't really care. People who are pick me type Jews don't care. They think that they'll be saved because they're in a palace somewhere and nice and safe until the war eventually comes to them. We as Jewish people need to stand up and protect ourselves. This goes for the Jews of Israel through the IDF, and this goes for Jews of every community around the world, including the Persian Jews thousands of years ago. You need to stand up and protect yourself. We need to use social media, podcasts, we need to talk to our politicians, we need to be as loud or louder than those people who are out chanting, trying to get us to be destroyed, trying to convince the leaders not to care about our lives. We need to make sure that we are louder and make them understand this is serious. And when people do come to metaphorically attack us, verbally, protests, whatever, it is our job to stand up and not hide. And it's hard not to ignore the fact that study after study after poll has shown that the people of Gaza and the West Bank, due to the UNRWA's propaganda for 20 years, is standing on the side of genocide. It's almost like the story of Esther, where all of the townspeople get a big notice from Haman saying, "Hey guys, we're killing Jews today, get ready, go kill all the Jews in your community," and they just bought into it. People often talk about innocent Gazans, and yes, there are. But those who support the idea of genocide and martyrdom, we can't really allow these people to continue to believe this for another generation. How much longer do the Jews have to put up a fight? If it isn't for Haman and his sons all being killed, the Jews of Persia may not have survived. There may not have been Jews of Persia. So here we are with world leaders saying, oh, maybe Israel don't go into Rafah. Don't take out Hamas. That would be like saying, hey, let's kill Haman, but let's leave his sons alive. Are we really thinking that's a good idea? Like Haman's sons are not going to be a problem? Hamas and Haman cannot continue to control Gaza. Otherwise, we will have another attempt at killing Jews. If we ignore this story of Esther, and the reason why we are forced by Jewish tradition to read it is because this isn't a mistake that it's just happened 2,000 years ago. It happens all the time to us. And we need to remember this when it happens, like right now. So don't forget the story of Esther. Use this as a guide of how you're going to act right now. Stand up, be strong, be proud, and don't allow these people to get away with what they're getting away with. Hopefully this Purim, some of you will hear this podcast and hear the story of Esther and really internalize what it means right now in these times of dire need for the Jewish community. If you are a Jewish person, how you can act. If you are a non-Jewish person, how you can act in order to protect your Jewish friends, family members, coworkers, colleagues, whatever it might be. We all have a role to learn from Esther and her story. Let's just make sure we don't ignore it or forget it. This has been another episode of the Jewish Diaspora Report. Don't forget to check us out on social media at jdr.podcast and check out some of our other episodes on your favorite podcast source. We'll see you next time.